Hour number two on this Thursday morning. Jags will have a chance to take a real stranglehold on the AFC South. Win over the Titans. That would put them 3-0, and the Titans falling to 1-2. We'll see how it all plays out down there. It'll be a noon kickoff here in town. And with that being said, we bring in Mark Long from the Associated Press. Covers the Jags. Mark, how you doing?
Hey, doing well. How are you?
Doing well. Impressive win last week over New England. We were just kind of talking about in the last hour, you just kind of expecting the Patriots to come back, and the Jags kept their foot on the gas, and they didn't let it happen.
Yeah, getting out to that huge lead, 14-0, was critical. You know, as Tom Brady pointed out after the game, the last thing you want to do, any team in this league, no matter how good you are, is play to the strength of your opponent. And that's exactly what the Pats did. When you're down 14-0 and then 28-3, you know, you're or 24, I don't know what the score was. I think it was 28-3. But whatever it is, it's, you know, you're all of a sudden chasing. And that plays right into what Jacksonville does, because they're really good at in the secondary, and they're really good about getting after the quarterback. So you know, at that point, you know, they were in a world of trouble. And not even the Pats could come back. But listen, there's no doubt about it. This is a really good football team that they've assembled after years of embarrassment, and they're ready to compete in the AFC, and that was the statement game that showed it.
No doubt about it. Leonard Fournette set out that game. Was on the sidelines being a good cheerleader. He was limited in practice yesterday. What do you think your best guess is for his availability, or will there be? Do you think he plays on Sunday? Is there a chance of it?
Yeah, I think it's better than a chance. I think him being out yesterday in a limited role was a huge step toward playing, and he's back out today. I'm out of practice right now, and he's out there practicing, you know, just like everybody else, you know, with he doesn't even look limited. So I would think that he's a slam dunk to play. This is a guy who hasn't missed, you know, games in consecutive weeks in his 2-year career. So my guess is they were precautionary with him last week, and he'll be back this week doing his thing.
I know, we know the significance of the left tackle, so I get it, but I just want you to expound on it. But how big of a loss is losing the left tackle for the season?
It's big because, listen, nobody has good backups on the offensive line anymore. They're few and far between. So all of a sudden, you know, you got a step. There's obviously a step back there. Anybody who's watched Josh Wells play in the preseason knows it's a pretty significant step. He's still a young kid who's developing and has only played 4 games in this league. So, you know, he's got a long way to go. Cam Robinson was a guy who was pretty solid for them last year. He hadn't played great this year and in the preseason, but, you know, they know he was what he was capable of, and they're not so sure Josh Wells can do that. And here's the other thing. They don't have, you know, Mercedes Lewis was a tight end they let go last year, was one of the better run-blocking tight ends in the league, and you could line him up next to a young offensive tackle and really, you know, slow down or shut down the Brian Arakpos or the J.J. Watts in this league, you know, one of the better defensive ends by doubling them up. You know, they don't have that now. They got all these pass-catching tight ends with, you know, led by Austin Seferian Jenkins. So that's where you start to wonder, you know, can they, if they get in a hole, can if they're in trouble against a really good pass rush, how are they going to be able to help Josh Wells on that side? You know, I think it'll be a lot of chipping from running backs and whatnot, but that's where they're at, and that's where they're going to have to be for 14 games, cognizant of what they've got on the left side and finding ways to get the ball out quicker and maybe roll Blake Bortles, some of those things that you can do to alleviate those issues.
I thought when they lost the Allens at receiver, Hearns and Robinson, that they were going to take a step back at that position. I've been really impressed. Obviously, we've all seen the one-handed catch by Keelan Cole. That was really impressive. D.D. Westbrook has also showed up as well. I've been impressed by those two guys replacing Robinson and Hearns.
Yeah, they went out and they thought they were too slow at receiver with Allen Robinson and Allen Hearns. And so they went out and they got speed guys. They drafted D.D. Westbrook last year in the 4th round. Biletnikoff winner from Oklahoma. They went out and signed Dante Moncrief, and then they think Keelan Cole, they think the world of Keelan Cole. They think he's an absolute budding star, and he's an undrafted kid from tiny little Kentucky Wesleyan, and he was a little over his head last year, admittedly so, being from, you know, playing in front of 1,500 people to trying to get used to the game speed of the NFL. But he's come along, and all of a sudden now those three guys, they've got a lot of weapons and a lot of speed, and you can really stretch the defense. And when you want to really run the ball, and that's what they want to do here, you got to have guys on the outside that kind of keep the defense honest. And that's really what they're trying to do with all that speed. And you saw it last week when they said, listen, we don't have Leonard Fournette. We're not going to let these guys gang up on us and get us in third and long. We're going to go out and attack them. And they did that to the pass, and those guys were running wide open pretty much the entire first half all over the field.
We're talking to Mark Long. He is with the Associated Press, covers the Jacksonville Jaguars. They host the Titans coming up on Sunday, big division game. And, Mark, let's go a little further with Bortles, because it seems to be a weekly question, especially for us up here, to ask, okay, can he get to a next level? Can he build off of what he did in the postseason last year? In week one, you weren't really sure. They didn't do a whole lot against the Giants. They sort of played it close to the vest. That was probably the best way to play, given the situation there. But I did not envision him being able to pass them to a win over the Patriots. But that's exactly what they did last week.
Yeah, he's done it in the past. He did it last year and certainly before that. But it wasn't against that kind of quality opponent. You know, it was against a team like Seattle that was, you know, banged up in the secondary last year, or you know, a team like Indianapolis that was awful defensively last year. So that really was a huge step for him. Best game of his career, 370 yards passing, 4 touchdowns. He really looked the part. And I think what he's really done is he's found a way to play to his strength, which is mobility in the pocket, throwing on the run, throwing off balance. I mean, he's not the most accurate guy on the planet. He's not going to sit in the pocket and pick you apart like some of these guys are capable of. But where he does, he can hurt you, is that mobility and being able to throw off the off his back foot, off his front foot, running, you know, left, running right. He's a little bit of a wizard like that. And they've figured out how to play to that and make that his strength. And that's what you're kind of seeing, and that's what the Patriots certainly saw last week.
How much are you hearing the payback narrative coming in? You're hearing a lot of that down there?
It's all we're hearing. Listen, it's
really?
Payback tour 2018. Miles Jack called it. Listen, they open with at the Giants. That's the team that fired Tom Coughlin. And anybody who thinks Tom Coughlin's not involved here is crazy. Tom Coughlin's super involved here. So week one, they're at the Giants. Payback for Coughlin. They all said it that week. Week two, you got the AFC champ who beat you, ended your season at home. Week three, you got the Titans, the team that beat you twice, swept you last year, and was chirping about they should have been the AFC South champ. This plays right in their hand. Next week, the third straight home game. They play the Jets, another team that shocked them in overtime last year. So it's right off the, you know, this three-game homestand is three teams that gave them 4 of their 7 losses last year. It's absolutely what they're hanging their hat on right now. It's what they're talking about. Miles Jack said it best. He said, "You in this league, if you can find a reason to hate your opponent, you're that much better off." And they have plenty of reason to hate the Tennessee Titans this week, and you know, for the next 10 times they play, because you know the Titans have been their nemesis for decades.
That's an interesting thought, because you don't always hear teams overtly talk about that, but it sounds like that is the motivating factor. It does line up really interesting. You I think to broaden it from the perspective of people here to say, oh yeah, you know, the Titans beat the Jaguars too. But you look at the full schedule, that's a pretty interesting way to line it up. It's probably something you can use.
Oh, no doubt about it. And they are. And the reason why they use it is that's who they are. They're this confident, cocky, brash, bold, whatever you want to say about them, they'll take it. That's who we are. They got Jalen Ramsey, and they think, you know, he's kind of the mouthpiece of the defense, but he's far from the only guy talking. Tayshaun Gibson, the safety, loves to talk. linebackers, Miles Jack, Kelvin Smith, love to chatter. Malik Jackson, defensive tackle, one of the biggest trash talkers in the locker room. So, and they're given the freedom to say what they want as long as they back it up. Now, Doug Marone will be the first one to jump down their throat if they talk all the talk and then don't go walk the walk. But this is a team right now that is feeling itself, feeling, you know, pretty good about itself. And so Doug Marone has, as long as they're winning, he has no problem with them saying whatever they want as long as they're backing it up.
Did Doug Marone thaw out after the freeze out from Bill Belichick on the handshake, the flyby handshake after the game against the – I mean, I watched that. I was like, holy – I mean, Bill barely even got his hand. He was moving so fast past Marone.
Yeah, listen, we all know this. Bill Belichick does not like to lose. He's not necessarily the most gracious winner out there, but he's certainly not a very good loser, as a lot of these guys. But, yeah, that was unbelievably cold, and I think Doug will survive.
I'm sure he will.
He's got his win, and if they see him again in the playoffs, he made it very clear in his postgame. Hey, listen, we expect to see these guys again in the playoffs. And he told his team, be careful what you say, be careful, you know, what you talk about, because we're going to see these guys again, and we expect every bit of it. So, you know, listen, and they welcome it. If they see him again, they'll welcome it, and Doug Marone will probably have some great line about Bill Belichick shaking his hand.
I absolutely feel no better about this game after talking to you, but thanks for doing this.
Anytime, guys.
Thank you, Mark. Mark Long covers the Jags for the Associated Press. We'll come back and expound on the Titans-Jags on the other side. Darren and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Is Jacksonville the best team in the AFC right now? We played this game in the SEC East. Who's number two today? We got a variety of answers. I think our consensus was Kentucky, I think, if you gathered all the votes. I think.
I don't know if we ever came to a consensus, but I'm fine with saying that it was Kentucky.
Yeah, I think people weighed in and there were a variety of answers. I think Kentucky right now gets the nod.
I think you got to give them the nod.
So, who's the best team in the AFC today?
I think
can't you make the case it's absolutely the Jags?
I don't know if it's absolutely, but I think they are.
Okay,
who would you
argue against?
Kansas City's got to be in the mix. Just we're talking about 2 weeks here.
I know.
We got a long way to go, but Kansas City's been impressive.
They have. Their defense is still they're not going to score 42 points a game. They can't.
No, but
they're not going to win this way.
And we talked about this with Tim Hasselbeck yesterday. Jacksonville didn't look that impressive in beating the Giants, who looked pretty weak. They kept it close to the vest. Their offense didn't look like anything. Now, they lost Fournette midway through the game, so that might have changed how they approached it. But they didn't attack very much. Their offense looked like the same Jacksonville offense. And what did we talk about with the key stat for the Jags last year? When they jumped ahead, they were very good at just sitting on it, letting their defense and special teams win the game for them. When they fell behind, they almost never came back and won. So that's going to be a big thing for the Titans. Can they avoid falling behind? Because especially with the way their offense looks now, it looks like they're going to get Lawan back. We still don't know about Mariota. We know the matchups on the outside are going to be extremely difficult. I don't know how they're going to win in a high-scoring game. They're certainly going to have a lot of trouble coming back if they fall behind quickly 10-0 or 13-0. I don't see a comeback in the works.
Well, if it's just like last week, yeah, they get down 14-0. It's good night, Irene. Thanks for playing. It won't happen. But, okay, I'll grant you the Chiefs. You're right. I can't. We're asking today.
I'm going Jags over the Chiefs because
poo-poo.
Of what you said.
They went to the Chargers in Pittsburgh and beat them. I mean, they've started off their season on the road and won convincingly. They were the better team. So you're right. It's the Chiefs and the Jags, but I would give the slight edge to the Jags. And I know it's probably because I'm thinking big picture, really the way these rosters are constructed. Who do I think will be better in the long run? Because I still question the Chiefs' defense. It's not very good, but their offense is so good. But you know, good defenses will eventually. What are you going to put your stock in? The really, really good offense or the really, really good defense?
Well, I don't know if – so we're going to go off of today.
Today.
How
just today.
Rosters
yeah.
are currently composed. I would think you'd actually have to say Kansas City.
Just because they did it on the road?
I mean, they won on the road.
Chargers
they beat
and Steelers.
The Chargers and
yeah.
the Steelers on the road. So I would have to say Kansas City. And in New England right now is not who New England's probably going to be. I mean, even this weekend – bless you back there.
I was going to say, what do we got going? We got a somebody's allergic to.
Because now that New England now has Josh Gordon, and then they're going to have Julian Edelman here in 2 weeks.
Tristan's having problems back there.
Tristan is allergic to our conversation.
All right. He doesn't like the Chiefs take. So never mind. I retract that statement. Jags.
So, yeah, I mean, look, you do have to factor that in, but right now, today, you can't throw the Patriots in there because they just lost to the Jags. But you're right. Julian Edelman comes back after week four. Whatever happens with Josh Gordon, look, you're not going to get
factor.
Me to jump in and say, oh, my gosh, this is the greatest thing. No.
But they have a huge need for him to just do something. If he does anything and they get Edelman back, all of a sudden that position group goes from being a major question mark to – a potential strength.
But
that's
how
scary.
About Mark Long? I mean, he laughed because he knew the answer to the question of, are they using last
payback.
Year as motivation and payback?
The payback
because
tour.
The Titans swept them.
It's not just
and
a game, it's a tour.
You couldn't even get the question out, and he is laughing. Like, you betcha.
How most coaches, and I think I leave it a lot, and they usually are echoed by their players. When you throw in like revenge factor or payback, no. They usually downplay it, at least for the public eye. Now, internally, they're probably playing up more than we know. But usually for public consumption, they don't want that out there. But they're making no bones about it. They are a brash team. 10-2 when they scored first last year. 2-5 when they allowed the first score. That's just the first score. That's not even ahead at the half, ahead after three quarters, all of that stuff. So the early part of this game is going to be very, very interesting. I think the Titans defense, you got to hope, can bottle them up and give the offense a chance. I'm really concerned about how does the Titans offense go about driving the ball against this defense. We don't even know if Mariota can play. It's just as confusing as it has been, and I'm sure it's really frustrating for Marcus Mariota himself. He doesn't know how the It doesn't sound like it's a thing where treatment is going to solve it in a certain amount of time. It's just whenever it happens, it's going to happen. The tingling, the numbness,
the
reference of the guitar string. That was interesting.
What is the tackle situation this week?
It looks like Luan is going to be okay.
I would say.
It looks like it. Keep your fingers crossed. I think there's still another bridge or two to cross there.
Although, Mike Vrabel is, this is what we've learned very early on. He loves to have a street window, right? A showcase window. And he puts players up in the window, so when you walk by, you see him, and you're like, oh!
Hey, there he is!
Hey! There's Jack Conklin! There's Taylor Wan! There's Mariota! And then he pulls him back.
Right. It's very cryptic.
Pulls him back.
He even referenced on his weekly...
He loves to trot him out for the media session where they can see practice, and then when the curtain closes... Those players disappear.
Also, he said this on his radio show, according to the Tennessean, hoping that Jack Conklin could be available in some capacity.
Seems like the wrong game for him to come back.
But I'd still rather have him in there than not.
Why? Is there ever a good game?
I mean, the
Bills?
You're going to roll them in there against the Eagles?
Right, the Eagles are next week. So, I mean...
I'm looking at, like, you don't know what the quarterback situation is. I mean, you're going to go up against one of the best defensive lines in Jacksonville.
They don't play Holy Cross on their schedule where you can
ease
them back in.
I understand, but, you know, just...
There's no James Franklin schedule in the NFL where you can ease
in. And there's not, unlike baseball or hockey, you can't send a guy down and play a couple games in the minors.
Well, it sounds like they're trying to ease him back in. He might be available in some limited capacity. Isn't that the same thing as easing in a player?
Okay, but
you're going to ease him in against Jacksonville's
again,
defense?
I guess they eased
again
in Rashawn Evans, right? What did he play?
Yeah.
One special team play? Yeah,
exactly. So, apparently they're going to try and do that.
Okay, so that, again, has you wondering, what is in Mike Vrabel's mind, really, when he says that? Because unlike in some college programs where they do rotate offensive linemen at times, usually the offensive line in pro football especially, your five are going to be your five on the offensive line. You don't just ease him in and let's play him for a series or two and then take him out and rest him. I think if he's in, he's in. On both sides of the
I don't right. I don't
and then
think
what,
there's
what is going what is the illness with Dennis Kelly? I don't know. That's another one that's very cryptic. Dennis Kelly is out of the hospital, but he's not in the building with us right now. I anticipate that happening later in the week. What do we know specifics of what happened to him?
There's speculation. There's stuff out there.
But they haven't said what it is. Mm-hmm. Just illness, right?
Right. The team has not, yes.
Okay.
So
well, there's another guy that's
virus,
important guy.
Something going on. Yeah. So, but the team is not officially set. So it doesn't look like he's available.
Well, not today, but by Friday or Saturday, could he be?
Like, I hesitate with the Taylor Lewan because I feel like sometimes they're putting him up in the window so we can walk by and say, oh, my gosh, Taylor Lewan, there he is. Oh, he's in the store. Whoa, okay. But then they close the curtain and Taylor Lewan disappears. So I hesitate. It does look like all signs are pointing.
Well, they gave more
him
detail.
Yes,
they gave more detail on him.
That's the thing. Here's you have
quote
to listen to the words.
I think he's close. He just still has to get that last clearance from the outside doctor, which hopefully will come Thursday. That's today. Then we can move forward. So that's pretty specific. There, the other two are not specific.
I guess what I'm getting at is I no longer use practice as a gauge whenever it's reported, hey, he's practicing. Yeah, well.
But if he gets, he's cleared through the protocol, he'll be in there. Is that fair to say?
Mariota threw a pass yesterday. I get it.
That one's tough.
But that's also when people can see it. Then when people couldn't see, then what happened? That's what I want to know. We'll come back. If you missed our interview with PK Subban, a really good sit-down with him yesterday to wrap up the show at Centennial Sportsplex. We'll play that interview next on Darren and Donick, ESPN 102.5 The Game. First home preseason game tomorrow night, Bridgestone Arena. Preds will host the Tampa Bay Lightning. We were at a Centennial Sportsplex yesterday and caught up with PK Subban.
PK Subban has made his way over. We were talking about you being at the Drake concert last night. You got to meet Drake, but we were trying to figure out previous relationship or you just got to hang with him at the show. Our guess is previous relationship. You set the record straight.
Yeah, you know what? I've been very lucky and privileged enough to have a relationship with him for quite a long time now. And not just him, but his whole team of people, from Angelo to Future to CJ, Chubbs to Abby, who helps out with everything pretty much for OVO and their whole group. So and through my manager, Jill Smoller at WME, who has helped Drake, and his business. Same with Brent Smith, who have a great relationship with him. And it just kind of all tied in together. But growing up in Toronto, I was able to meet him fairly quick. And, we've just kept in touch. And because he performs on the road and has so many tours over the years, I've been able to go see him. And I guess you could say that I'm just more familiar with Drake and his crew. And I was able to parlay that friendship into kind of a meet and greet for all of us post-concert. And I think the guys really enjoyed it.
You get good tickets, but Drake gets really good tickets. I mean, when I think of Drake, I always think of sporting events. He's sitting usually courtside, PK.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I mean, he's not just an artist. You know, he's much, much bigger than that. And I was talking about it yesterday. You know, I'd posted that video of Vince Carter during the slam dunk contest. And really, I think there's kind of two major events, or two people, rather, that change Canada as a country and change the city of Toronto, which is now the third largest city in North America and probably one of the hottest cities to be in, regardless of what work you're in or whether you're just moving there to live there. It's a huge city and it's a destination for everyone. And I think that started with first Vince Carter, after that dunk contest, that kind of put Toronto on the map. And then Drake just coming in and watching his career blossom and really owning the fact that he's from Canada and he's Canadian and he was born and raised in Toronto. And since he's kind of come on the scene, the city's just sort of exploded. So very, very proud of him and what he's accomplished. And he's definitely a guy you can learn from.
Don't you think he's also done a lot to promote just basketball there, just because that team's fan base, he's kind of given the fan base an identity there as they've won more games?
Oh, for sure. And, he's not just doing that because he gets paid to do it or he's an ambassador for the franchise. I mean, you see pictures of him as a young kid growing up. I mean, anybody who was a kid growing up in Toronto during that era of Vince Carter, you know, became a basketball fan. Even if he didn't like basketball, I mean, he made it cool. He made Toronto cool. He made it cool to wear a Vince Carter jersey, you know, even with Kobe Bryant and all these amazing players. I mean, Vince Carter at one point arguably may have been the best player in the NBA, you know, at one point in his career, and we had him, and we took ownership of that. And so it's great to see him kind of sticking to that authenticity of where he's from and how he grew up, and really that's what's made him who he is. I mean, as much as he's embraced Toronto, it's that Canadian different style and different culture that people all over the world can embrace now.
What's his hockey knowledge? How big is he in hockey?
Well, you know, I've never really spoken to him about hockey. I know that
he doesn't pick your brain about hockey?
Well, we've spoken about it briefly. I remember when I first met him, we talked about it because he grew up in Forest Hill and a lot of his friends played hockey or watched hockey. And even a bunch of his boys tell me that they're always using me in NHL and they're always playing video games and stuff like that. I mean, he's a big sports fan, so I know he watches. But, you know, for the most part, whenever I see Drake, I mean, he's so busy. He's on the road. He's running. So I see him after the concert. We'll talk for 20, 25 minutes. We'll hang out a little bit. We have mutual friends, and then that'll be it. You know, if we talk about anything, we'll talk about, you know, the playoff run we had, or, you know, how well our team's doing, or the fact that I'm in Nashville now. And we keep it kind of high level that way. But he is a huge sports fan, and just very thankful for him taking the time to meet all of my teammates last night.
You brought up video game. Has the reality set in that you're on a video game?
You know what? I don't
know. That's like the coolest thing, right?
Yeah, and it's just like I forget about it, and then I'll see something on my Instagram or something with my face on it, or someone will make a comment, and I just think back. I'm like, wow, you know, just to be on the cover is a huge deal.
Think about when you're a kid playing video games.
I know.
We all remember the covers.
I think it'll really sit in once somebody else is on the cover, you know, because then I'll be like, oh, I'm not on the cover anymore. That's really cool that I was for a year, you know. So I'm just trying to embrace it and come into training camp ready to go and have a good season to justify the fact that I'm on the cover.
you've PK Subban with us here. PK, you've talked about meeting a guy like Drake, getting to know him a little bit. You appreciate it because of what you do. You get a chance to meet a lot of different athletes. I can remember a couple of years ago you talked about how well you knew DeMarco Murray. Mm-hmm. So when you get into these circles, when you talk to another athlete in another sport, what do you enjoy picking their brain about to appreciate what they do and maybe they appreciate what you do?
Well, I mean, first of all, the best athletes in the world, they usually don't like to talk about their secrets and what they do to make them so great. I've been very lucky that the majority of the athletes that I've met are in other sports. So they'll share, you know, different things with me. Like, for instance, you know, LeBron James is a guy who I admire for not just what he's accomplished on the court, because there might be players in the NBA, like Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, that may have more rings and points and all that stuff. But I admire just how consistent he's been over his career and how dominant he's been during that time. You know, I can maybe think of one season maybe where he was a little banged up and you weren't sure if he was going to be able to dominate, and then he bounced back the next year and just shows that he still is the top guy in the league. And for him to do that at his age with the style of play that he has is pretty remarkable. So I know that last year I picked his brain and his team's brain on some of the trainers that he's been using, and I shifted all my stuff to kind of LA, and you know, I know my girlfriend Lindsay's lives there during the off season, so that helps obviously being there. But it was a different summer for me training wise. It was a lot of fun just trying something different, waking up at 5 a.m. every morning to sunshine and no clouds or rain every day. I mean, it was living in California is a different lifestyle, but to be able to meet with some of the people that he's worked with in the past and bring some different things into my training is unique. I mean, I didn't do anything crazy to change anything, but just some tweaks here and there.
I'm sure that also keeps it fresh for you, right? You have this balance of life. You like to experience things, travel, see different things, but also you work extremely hard in the off season. So does that motivate you a little bit? Was that fun to say, I'm going to take on this new challenge and I'm maybe this will get me to another level?
Yeah, you know what? I've been very lucky throughout my career. I've been fairly healthy, and I haven't missed very many games to date, and thank God for that. I said, you know, listen, the past two seasons and last year, I was lucky enough to play all 82 games. I don't know if anybody on our team did, but the two previous seasons before that just had some bad luck and some weird things happen, and which isn't really the usual for me. I'm always, you know, take pride in being healthy and wanting to play every game, and did that last year. And this summer I wanted to take another step forward and really just managing my body, and I've always done that. You know, I got my own team of chiropractors, osteopaths, massage therapists that travel everywhere and come see me on the road, come to Nashville to treat me, and I've always wanted to take care of my body so that I can play the game as long as I want to play and have that success. And, you know, now I'm going to be 30 at the end of this year, and can't believe it. This is my 10th year pro, 9th year in the NHL. It goes by quickly, so just trying to manage it so that I can hopefully play another 9 years, you know, or 10 years in the league.
How hungry is this team? I got to imagine that from the day you guys ended your season, you said, we want this group, we want them back, we don't want to make any big changes, and the team did not, that you've been looking forward to getting everybody back together and getting this thing cranked up.
Yeah, you know what? I think, first of all, it starts with just our group of guys. I mean, last night we're at the concert, and we just have great chemistry. You know, there's a sense of love for everyone, and everyone loves each other, and I think that's really, really important. You know, you want to play hard for the guy next to you, you know, and I've never played, you know, on a team where we've had this good of a group, and I think that's why we wanted another crack at it as a group. We know that it's a business, and this is going to be our third year with the same core, and we have to make the best of it. And, you know, it's not any added pressure. I mean, you know, we had all that added pressure last year, and we showed that we could perform during the regular season and parts of the playoffs. Now we got to, you know, manage the regular season in a way that we can make the postseason, first of all, and then second of all, when we get there, is to make sure that we get the job done. And we know what it takes. I think a lot of young guys gained a ton of experience over the past two seasons, so I'm excited for everyone.
Dan Hamhuis is a guy that we got to know when he was a very young player and it turned into a veteran in this league. He's been gone now for a while and he's back. But he's a guy that brings a lot to the table, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. You know, he's a veteran player. He's played over 1,000 games in the NHL. Just having him around, and I think, you know, throughout a season, it's going to help to have a guy like that. You know, last year we had, you know, Scott Hartnell. You know, in previous years we've had Vernon Fiddler and these guys that have been around long enough that when we go through the ebbs and flows of a season, they can step up and say something and make everybody feel comfortable. And I think we have a lot of young guys. You know, I consider myself, Yost, Ecky, and Ellie still, and Joey and Forsberg still young guys. You know, as far as the league goes, maybe we're not the youngest guys, but I still feel we're a young core group of leaders, and we want to make sure that we're saying all the right things. But having a guy like Dan around definitely helps.
And one thing that
we consider you young, too.
Yeah. And one thing that, too, is very apparent, the last few guys that have re-upped with the team, it looks very exciting to think about this core can stay together for a long time. This isn't a window that's going to close anytime soon.
Well, I hope so. I mean, you know, I know that...
Knock on wood, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I have so much respect for this organization, Barb and Herb Fritz, the ownership group, and, you know, David Poile and what he's done over his career and tenure as a GM in the league and how he manages the business, how he treats people. Peter Laviolette, I mean, speaks for himself, you know, what he's accomplished in the league as a coach and just how they treat people, how they treat you every day and giving everybody an opportunity to come into work and do their job. And it's just been probably the best point in my career just playing in Nashville, coming to the rink every day. I've never been happier, and I just want to make the best of this opportunity. You know, I was brought in to help this team win and win a championship. I don't know how long I'm going to be here for, hopefully for a very, very long time, but I also understand the business, and I just want to make sure that I take care of what I can control, and that's helping this team win, and I want to do that.
All right, last thing, you've got the skating down. How's your skiing?
Well,
are you a good skier?
You know what? I've snowboarded before in grade 8. Anybody from the GTA region in Toronto knows Blue Mountain and Barrie, and it's about 45 minutes from Toronto to an hour. And I did some snowboarding there in grade 8. That's as close as I got to skis. I've never put on skis. But
really?
I can tell you that at some point, either during my career, let's knock on wood that nothing happens if I do that, but either during or post-career, I definitely will be getting on some skis and trying it out.
How do you think you'll be the first time? You think it'll be easy or hard?
I'm not sure. I've done snowboarding before, so I know the importance of carving and turning and not just going straight shoot down double black diamond. I mean, that's not going to work out too well for you. So I understand that. I know that much. Some people who ski for the first time don't get that. They just try to stay straight, and that's the worst thing you can do. You got to try to turn. So... but I don't know. I think I'd be learning from one of the best people to ever ski. So,
yeah.
Got a good teacher.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling that part of her is not going to want to tell me too much at the start. She's going to want to see me fall down a few times first. So Yeah.
Hey, thanks for stopping by. Good to see you.
All right, thanks, guys.
Really good conversation yesterday at Centennial Sportsplex with PK Subban. Hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Don't forget this hour. Just time is ticking. Another chance to qualify for that awesome trip to ESPN up in Bristol, Connecticut. Be listening sometime in the next 15 minutes. You're going to get that cue to call. Know that ESPN personality, and you can get qualified for that big trip next Friday. We'll announce the winner. Back to wrap up the second hour next. Thank you, Sean. Hey, Smashville. Preds are hosting their first ever Preds Fest. That'll be Friday, September 28th. That's next Friday from 3 until 10 p.m. That'll be at Bridgestone Arena and the Walk of Fame Park. For more information, visit thegamenashville.com under the Events tab. We'll get into some more previews on some of these big college games coming up in the next hour. Don't forget Silly Underdog Picks at 1 o'clock. We'll review and then make our live selections. Floyd Reese, Derek Mason, George Plaster, Kelly Holcomb, myself, and the commissioner, Willie Donick. Adam Vingan, who writes for The Athletic, covers the Predators. An interesting article he just put out there on Pecorine.
First of all, every time I hear, should I stay or should I go, it reminds me of Stranger Things now. That's changed the last couple of years. Didn't used to. Because I had the album back in the day.
Where's season two?
Combat Rock.
Huh? Have they started? Have they done season two yet?
What are you talking about?
Stranger Things? What's the deal?
They've had two seasons.
They have? Am I waiting for the third?
Waiting for the third season.
Waiting for the third. When's that coming out?
Maybe you're waiting for the second. Sounds like you're waiting for the second.
You don't have to wait for the second. The second is there. You can. Yeah, you can choose to wait. You don't have to.
Well, you've gone dormant on your Stranger Things talk, so maybe I'm out of the loop. Did I just watch the first season or both seasons?
I hope you watch both, because if you haven't, what are you waiting on?
Well, I watched everything that was available at the time when you got me sucked into that.
Well, then you've watched two seasons,
I think. Okay, then I've watched two.
Have you?
I don't know.
I don't think we have a clear answer.
I don't even watch Stranger Things. I know there's two seasons already out.
Yes. Why have you not watched
it? Not interested.
Not interested?
Nope.
Oh, come on.
Enough people tell me to watch it. I'm not going to watch it.
Wow, okay, fine. Be that way. It's
I don't
a free
know.
Country.
It didn't sound like something I'd be into.
Well, the 80s thing for people our age is definitely an allure, but I also think it's a really well done thing. Also, because it's not just it's set in the 80s, it's all the references and all the genres of movies at the time. It's well done.
When's the third one coming out?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
I wish I knew.
So, Pecorine's future.
Adam Vingan picked up on a narrative that you heard from David Poile earlier in the offseason after they got the Ryan Ellis deal done. Remember, he was on our show, David Poile, and he mentioned between us. Actually, we had Ryan Ellis on, and then David Poile went on with Jared and the GM, and he mentioned to those guys that the next order of business was to have a talk with Pecorine about what is next. They had, according to Adam, in the article he put on The Athletic, they have not had that talk yet, but they know it's coming. But he did get an interesting quote from David Poile about the future of Pecorine. He had a good talk with Pekka. Pekka, I thought, did a really nice job in the article of saying the right things. That he sounded like he wants to keep playing after this season. But he also said, I know how good Juuse Saros is. He's ready. He's ready for more. He's going to be the guy. And then from David Poile, he said, I realized, he says, I want to talk to Pekka first, lay out everything that I can see in our organization and specifically with our goaltending. He says, I can tell you that bottom line, my goal would be, along with Pekka's agreement, to have him play here his entire career. That would be my goal. We have to find a way to make that work for both of us. And that's where it's going to be tricky, but I think if both sides are on the same page, I envision it getting done. Just like we knew Ryan Ellis's contract was going to be complicated, but we felt like it was going to get done. I think the same thing was true the year before with Ryan Johansson. You knew it was going to be tricky. It wasn't always going to be pretty, but it was going to get done. This one might be the trickiest of all of them, depending on how this season goes. But I, again, have the feeling inside that it will get done.
I've seen a lot of chatter on social media that people are fearful that after this year, which is going to end the seven-year, $49 million contract. It's hard to believe, right? I mean, I remember that day like it was yesterday, really. And now we're talking about going into the final year of that contract. People worried that they're going to see Pekka end his career in a different uniform. And I know that's happened in sports, right? We didn't think we would see Joe Montana in a Chiefs uniform. We didn't think we would see Franco Harris in a Seahawks uniform. We didn't think – I mean, we can go down the list. We know the list of great players. I didn't think we'd see Jerry Rice outside of a 49ers uniform. But, you know, it does happen, right? Sometimes they end their careers in a different uniform. I don't believe Pekka's one of those guys. I just don't. And I've told people – I don't think you have to worry there. I would be stunned if he – I think he would stay here to be a backup before he would go play somewhere
else. Okay, well, let's hear – this is what he said, and not that question specifically, but your vision, right? Because we are all having the vision of what is Pekka going to – where is the arc of his career? Where is the arc of UC Soros' career? They're both well aware of where they are in their career. UC Soros is an up-and-comer. Pekka is 36.
Well, you can only be called future for so long, right? How long does future before that nickname goes away? I mean, he's been future now for 3 years. Yeah. So they've been calling him future?
But he's still extremely young for a goalie.
Yes.
Consider that Pekka was not a starter in the league until he was about 27, I think, maybe even 28. And UC Soros is only 23.
Is he 23?
He's okay. going into his age 23 season. Here's what Pekka said. When you're talking about contracts, when you're talking about jobs, being a goalie, there's two spots. I feel like I have good years left still. Now, that's an indication that he's thought about playing beyond this season.
That is not a surprise.
Right?
I mean, look, Pekka has told us numerous times, age is just a number. I feel great.
Right. So there's the first thing, because there has been a thought, well, it's the end of his contract. He's going to be 36. Would he decide he doesn't want to play anymore after this year? Sounds like he's got a vision that he could still see himself playing beyond this year. I feel like I have good years left, though. Again, this is from Adam Vingan's article in The Athletic. At the same time, I'm super excited for Yusi, who's up and coming. He's ready and more ready every year. I look at him now, and he's a year older. He looks really good. I understand that's part of it, too. I don't know. Maybe at some point my job is to be the mentor or something else.
Well, he's already been that.
Well, but when he says the mentor, does that mean he becomes sort of sharing time or taking a back seat as the backup? I don't know. Maybe it sounds to me like he's thought about this. He goes, but I don't want to go too far ahead. And that's probably a good place to start.
Right, because this year he's the starter. There's no reason to think about anything past this year. Now, this time next year, it'll be a different conversation,
right.
I would think. But this year...
I think it's encouraging for those that want to see, and I'm one of them, that would like to see him finish his career here.
Look, the credit is to Pekka, Willie, because he's making this conversation a very difficult conversation because it's supposed to be easier, right? When you get to a certain age... you start talking about players declining, and it's just different. And you know that the writing is on the wall. The thing is winding down. And we've seen other guys, right? We've been like, yeah, look, nice guy. He's had an unbelievable career, but this looks like this is it for him, right? We come to those conclusions because it shows on the ice. This guy just won the Vezina, okay? He's playing as good as hockey as he's ever played. So credit to him that he's making this conversation not easy, because what if he has another spectacular year? It's going to be it's a weird conversation next year. Like, if he has a very average pedestrian year, you'd be like, okay, it's winding down. Look, he's going to be 37. It's pretty easy to start coming to all the conclusions. But what if he has another spectacular year? It's a weird situation.
But let's also give him credit for this. There are some old pros who have a lot of pride. I'll use Marty Brodeur as an example. I'll use Jerry Rice as an example. There are some players that never accept being a role player.
I don't like to compare Pekka to other goaltenders because Pekka is different than most, right? Pekka,
no, but I'm talking about the mentality of a number one guy who's been a number one guy for a long time.
But he's different.
They don't concede
right.
that.
But
they never concede
the situation
that they're not
is
the
different.
Man.
Like, there's some guys that don't want a mentor, some guys that don't want to treat the backup with respect and have a relationship. He's just the opposite, so you can't compare his situation with any other goaltenders because it's unique.
But that is
different.
Incredibly beneficial to the team, to David Poile, to UC Saros, because he could make it really, really tough and say, I am the man. Yeah. I'm not going anywhere unless, I'm not going to stay here unless I'm the man, because a lot of people do that.
My wife was listening to the conversation. She said she checked Netflix, our account, and I did watch both seasons. So,
oh, very nice. Thank you,
and
Mark.
Said,
Lauren,
she said,
while you're checking some of these accounts, get Darren on The Athletic, okay?
She said season 3 won't happen until the summer of 2019. So we've got a ways to
go. Oh, good info.
A lot of info, a lot of research.
December of 2019. So we got to wait through one more hockey season.
There you go. We'll come back and learn a little bit more about the Vanderbilt opponent. Saturday, South Carolina's in town. We'll talk about the Gamecocks to kick off the third hour. That's next on 102.5 The Game.